Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we are just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. First, let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. To learn more and to find their eggs, visit hansenbrookfarm.com. Today's show is all about cake and accounting. Don't think the two go together? Think again. Today's guest is Chelsea White, better known as Chel Sweets, the incredible self-taught baker who went from accounting to social media darling. Chelsea actually quit her day job 6 weeks ago, but it was a very planned and deliberate decision. She talks to us about the goals she set for herself and shares lots of advice in the process. No matter what career you're in, you'll find some nuggets of wisdom in our conversation. Before we get started, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for the chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Janine Booth is a mother hen. She's the Australian chef behind the Southern-inspired Root and Bone restaurants in New York City and Miami. Want to learn how Chef Janine makes her sweet corn spoon bread? The ingredients include Hansenbrook Farm eggs, some scallions, sharp cheddar cheese, and a touch of heavy cream. Or if you're like me and you're obsessed with deviled eggs, you can recreate her drunken deviled eggs. Chef Janine combines homemade pickled beets with Hansenbrook Farm's flavorful yolks to put a fresh, tangy spin on a classic party favorite. You can find Chef Janine's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. Where can you find Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs? At Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Here's my conversation with Chelsea White. Let's start at the beginning. Where are you from?
I was raised and grew up in Seattle, Washington.
I don't know many Seattle natives.
It's a fun place. It's gotten really trendy, I feel like, in the last few years. So I don't get annoyed, but whenever I say that, people are like, oh, the Pacific Northwest, it seems so beautiful out there. I'm like, yeah, it's like nice. It's good.
Did Amazon change Seattle? Could you feel it
100%.
When you were there?
Like, my parents live in Queen Anne now, which is like right next to what we call Amazon land. And it is so drastically different than it was even 5 years ago. Like, the whole city is different. And it's fine. It's brought, you know, a ton of money into the city and a ton of new people and different perspectives. But it's definitely a different vibe. It kind of is more like Manhattan now, though, so I'm mostly okay with it. But it definitely feels different.
It's a very cool scene for women in food.
Yeah.
We were there last year and did one of our Future of Food tours. There were so many places. We could not even go to all of them. Like Frankie and Joe's vegan ice cream. Linda Dershang has so many restaurants and bars out there, like Oddfellows. And she just opened a place called Queen City. I think it's like the oldest bar or tavern or something in the city. It was great.
Gonna have to check that out.
Absolutely. Renee Erickson. Do you know her?
Mm-mm.
She's a big chef in the city. I'll give you a list next time.
I was gonna say, yeah, I need to like get that.
Next time you go home. So I read that as a child, you were the kind of kid who would count all your money in your piggy bank.
I was. I loved money. I think that's probably why I became a CPA. It's not even that I love money so much. I think I'm just a little bit neurotic and I like numbers. And I think that money kind of plays into that. So yeah, I was definitely a type A child.
How did that manifest itself?
Well, number one, I also was really shy. So I think I am a little bit analytical. I think things through a lot. Sometimes I overthink things. And I think I would be that kid in the corner. Like, there's literally videos of me like staring at a clock. And I was like, what am I doing in that video, mom? And she's like, you're thinking about all the gears. And you can tell you're like watching everything and trying to figure out how it works. But like normal kids play with like toys on the ground or talk to their friends. And I'm just like sitting alone in the corner. I've become more social as I grew up, but I definitely was incredibly quiet when I was younger.
So I also read that it wasn't just that you liked money, you liked the security that came with money. So you were even thinking about that as a little kid?
Definitely. So my parents grew up, they're both one of three, and they definitely grew up with like limited means. And so they're super frugal. My mom is like a coupon queen. She, no matter how much money I think they ever have, she will always be the type of person that like wants a deal on something. And I think that really kind of shaped who I was. And it's not that like I'm so worried about how much money I have in the bank. It's really just this mindset of feeling, yeah, secure. Like if you are saving properly and you're planning out your life, I think that gives you a lot of freedom and peace of mind. And that's always been really important to me.
And you seem like you're a planner.
100%. I am such a planner. That's one of my favorite things about New York, though, is I used to try to plan. You know, I had this vision for myself where I thought I knew what my life was going to be like. I moved here, and if you had told me when I was 22 I was going to be doing what I'm doing now, I would have literally laughed out loud and said never. So New York has like not only opened so many doors, but forced me to stop trying to plan my life and just living it day by day.
So your dad's an accountant.
Yes.
How about your mom?
My mom is a teacher, and she for years taught a fourth, fifth gifted class, but she just became a STEM teacher. Actually, she's in her second year. She's heading up the program for her school district. So it's almost like a change of career for her. She's doing a whole new curriculum. She's heading it up with lots of other teachers. I'm so proud of her, but she is like a really great example of hard work and loving what you do. And I don't know, she's like shaping the next generation, and it's cool to see.
So when did you know you wanted to be an accountant?
So I grew up around that, and I knew I wanted to see what it was all about. I liked it enough, and then in college, I took it my freshman year, I think, and I really enjoyed it. So it's not that I'm like so passionate about accounting, but it makes sense. Like things go in their place. It works with the way my brain works.
I really wish that when I was in school, they taught practical math, because I took geometry, trigonometry, and I really do think, you know, you need to learn the basics for everything, but you never learn about balancing a checkbook or
nope.
What does it mean to have a mortgage, or what is the stock market all about, or what does interest mean?
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that that's one thing that is nice if you major in business, like you can get some of that practical experience and now they're trying to introduce more of that into curriculum just because it's important. But I still think that so many people don't get those fundamental teachings. And then when they enter the real world, it's scary when you don't know how to deal with something and you maybe didn't have the best example set for you growing up, or you didn't get to see someone do it. It's hard to do it yourself for the first time. So I 100% agree with that.
What would you even call it? Like household math, basic math skills for life, and home ec. That's what I want to see in high school.
I could have like used home ec. Like even though I bake, I really can't cook. It's not that I can't. I just don't. But I feel like it's because I'm a little bit scared of it. And I think if I had taken home ec and like been forced to cook chicken at age 16, I'd probably cook more now.
What was your first job out of college?
My first job out of college was working at Ernst & Young as an auditor in their banking and capital markets. Basically, in a financial statement, you know, there's different accounts and you're going through all the details that make up that number. So you're going to dig through everything, all the transactions, you're testing the controls on certain things to make sure that their systems are functioning correctly.
So you audit.
And yeah, you're just like deep diving. Some of it like is like almost interesting, but like a lot of it's
almost
not.
Interesting. That's the last thing you want to be described as. She was almost interesting. What was your next job?
My next job was at L'Oreal. I worked in their consumer products division, and I worked on Maybelline Garnier and Essie. It was a financial planning and analysis role, and I managed their social budgets. And so not only was it amazing to transition from public accounting to more of a, I mean, L'Oreal's a fun company. They have fun products. They have really passionate people that work there, and they're really great people. So it's an incredibly unique work environment, and it really taught me so much. But I also got to talk with all these people that manage the social budget. But it was so fun talking to digital marketers, hearing about different platforms, different strategies. It really got my mind thinking in that kind of a way. And it was really my first time looking at social media differently. And it's kind of funny because that's when Shell Suites was really starting and beginning to grow. And I can't help but think those things go hand in hand. So
absolutely. So tell me what you did after L'Oreal.
So after L'Oreal, I found a job as a digital client finance manager, and I realized that digital and finance was really what I was passionate about. So I jumped on that opportunity, interviewed, loved Edelman, and Edelman is a global communications marketing firm. So a lot of people think of them as a PR firm, but they do a lot more than that. And so that's kind of exactly where I was. I was in their digital department. So we worked on a lot of projects like website builds, app builds, UX experience.
So this whole time, almost the whole time, you are baking on the side.
I am.
When did you start baking?
I started baking pretty much when I moved to New York for the long haul. So I think I was 22. I made a batch of cookies and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. And I'd always loved Pinterest, but I think a lot of us go on Pinterest and we scroll, we look at pretty things, we don't do anything with it. But I was like, no, I'm going to bake these cookies and everyone liked them. And then it was a coworker's birthday and I was like, I'm going to make you a cake. And I got off work the night at like 10 p.m. or something. And I went home and I was like, I don't care how late I'm staying up, I'm making this cake.
Why were you so
set
on making this cake?
I just like was really excited about it. I think it was like a Snickers cake or something. But I had been thinking about it for like a week. I was ready. I'd been planning. And when you're staring at Excel like literally all day, it's just like you need something. You need that. So I went home, I made the cake. And it was like, if you really scroll on my Instagram far enough, you can still see it. It's like lopsided. I don't know what's going on with the frosting. I think I tried to do a drip and it's like all over the place. But it tasted so good and everyone loved it. And then they were like, well, so-and-so's birthday is in a month. Are you going to make them a cake? And I was like, maybe. And then it kind of evolved into this thing where I made everyone's birthday cakes. And then it was like we'd have rotating members and then people on other teams wanted cakes. And then before I knew it, like friends of friends were trying to order cakes. And I was like, I don't do that. And then I was like, well, I could try to do that. And then it kind of evolved into like me selling cakes, which then, of course, quickly got super out of hand. Luckily, I transitioned to L'Oreal during this
time. Wait, why did it get out of hand?
I was doing like 8 cakes a week. Like you can't, I was like, wasn't sleeping. Also, I had—
What were you charging for these cakes?
Like nothing.
Probably nothing,
like literally,
right?
I think like—
People are shocked how much a custom cake really costs.
I know. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that no one ever challenged my prices. The biggest mistake people make is they think that if you're a home baker, you should charge people what they would pay to buy a cake from a grocery store, but like absolutely not, because the time you're putting into it, you don't get to buy in bulk like a grocery store. You're also not making 100 cakes a day, and you have a huge facility where you can do it. So
did you not grow up baking?
No. So I—
Did your mom bake?
No. I mean, my mom makes like this plum cake that's German in the summary of like a prune plum tree in the backyard, but like that is like one thing she makes once a year, and she makes her own jam. But like, I didn't grow up in the kitchen baking. We did a lot of sports when we were little, and we just were out and about doing things and not in the kitchen very much. So
okay, so you didn't bake.
Nope.
So you just got in your head that—
Yep.
Do you think it was from Pinterest?
Probably. I think it also was just like, I was like kind of crafty as a kid. Like I loved arts and crafts and painting. And my friend actually, who now is a fashion designer, we would like fake cut up clothes and sew them. And so I always liked doing that kind of thing. And I think that when I became an adult and was working, I really missed having that kind of an outlet. And I think I needed something at that point in my life. And it just so happened that baking turned into that.
So it's out of control at some point. And how did it evolve? How did it evolve from you making cakes for the colleagues, selling some cakes, realizing like this isn't just a hobby anymore?
So I made all these cakes, I'm selling them, and then eventually I started making content, right? And it's like, how did that happen? That's a question I get asked all the time. And the answer is like one day Food Network like, I didn't even know about it. They wrote an article on Snapchat about me. And, like, they called me the crazy cookie queen or something, which, like, actually was not that relevant to the cakes I was making. But back then, I made more things. But I was, like, so excited.
So you weren't a cookie queen.
Well, No. I appreciate that, though, but no. But so I was like, oh, my gosh. And then they emailed me, like, a month or two later and, like, do you want to come in and do a shoot with us? And I was like, okay, yeah.
Did you have a lot of followers on Instagram at that point?
I think I had, like, maybe 30,000 or something.
Okay. Well, wait, that's a lot of followers. So
yes.
So were you getting all those people because you were posting all your cakes?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was like, you know, I was baking a lot and I was like taking photos of it. And I was, you know, you make something pretty in this day and age, you want to take a picture of it and share it. And so I had a lot of cakes going on and I was doing that.
Were you being really strategic about your Instagram account or you were just posting these pictures?
No, I mean, I like wasn't even picking what cakes I was making because they were orders. So it was, but I was posting frequently enough. And then, so I did the shoot with Food Network, and then I also started making my own cake videos about that time, because I was, like, seeing all these videos online, it was, like, summer of 2016, and I was, like, why can't I make, I'm making cakes all the time, like, why can't I record them, like, that's, it's such a fun process, like, let me share it. So I started, and my first cake video was, like, horrendous.
How did you figure out how to videotape yourself making cakes?
I bought a tripod, and I bought two lights, and I just set it up, and the first video was out of focus. And then I watched it and was like, oh. And then the next video, I got it focused, but it was off-centered. And then, like, the third video is, like, focused and centered. And then I realized, like, my hand, you know, it's just, like, it really evolved over time. And it's a learned skill. It's not, like, I think I learn by doing it. I think a lot of people do, too. And there's nothing like having to edit a video on, like, I literally use iMovie, by the way. It's nothing fancy. But there's nothing like watching a video and having to edit it when you have, you know, you notice the soap bottle in the background, or you notice that the cake is slightly not centered on the cake board, or that you pick up things over time. And I'm so neurotic that I hated seeing, like, what I would consider errors in my videos. So it's just like a process that evolved over time.
And I scrolled back quite a bit on your Instagram. I did not see that Snickers cake, but
you really got to go back for that.
But I did scroll back, and I did notice that your Instagram account has certainly evolved over time.
Definitely.
That, yeah. I'm guessing, was strategic.
I think I've just gotten better at what I'm doing. But I think that's just because, like anything, the more you do something, hopefully the better you get at it. And I think...
But, like, less personal photos, more cake photos.
Yeah.
The cake photos, you know, there's the cakes are all radically different, but the cake is the center of the photo.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, number one, I created a personal Instagram. So now if I have personal photos, I put them on that. And number two, yeah, it's just, I think people follow my account because they want to see cakes, they like the process, and so I want to create as entertaining a video as I can to, like, brighten their feed. So that's my main focus, and that's what I try to kind of, like, send out into the social media world when I post.
And you also blew up. I mean, if you only had 30,000 followers back in 2016, you're gunning toward a million now.
It's honestly, like, video just, like, makes you grow. Videos are so discoverable, and I also just think it's so compelling. It's so fun to see the full story of a cake from start to finish, to see how it's made. If there's a weird technique, you're like, oh, that's how they do it. Like, I love watching cake videos. I know I'm a baker, so I'm biased, but people message me all the time and I'll be like, I don't even bake, but I just find your videos so soothing. And I just think that it's just fun to watch. So I think beauty and baking are, like, two of the most discoverable categories. And I just happened to be lucky to have fallen into that category on Instagram and made videos when they really were becoming a priority on Instagram. So
two things. I noticed you use the word luck. We talk about the word luck a lot, and some women do not like using the word luck. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think a lot of us are very lucky, and I don't have a problem with the word. But I think you use the word luck because none of this was planned.
No, yeah, totally fell into it. And I don't have any problem with the word luck. I think that when you work really hard, you can kind of make your own luck. I totally believe that. I'm also obsessed with four-leaf clovers, and I, like, frequently look for them. But I really do believe in hard work. But I also think that sometimes it feels like the stars aligned and you just can't believe things are going the way they are. And
yeah, why you were born where you were born, yeah. At what time, to what parents, to
exactly.
So many things that you don't control.
And I think it's kind of like almost being fortunate versus lucky, but I have no problem with saying that I think I've been lucky through the whole process, but I've also worked incredibly hard to get where I am. So,
and I also notice you use the word baker, and you've written about struggling with what to call yourself.
Yes.
So you're finally comfortable with calling yourself a baker.
I made my media kit yesterday and I was like trying to write out like, you know, my mission statement and what I am. And I've done that for different purposes, but every time I have to sit down and really think about that, it's so hard. My order of things I call myself as of yesterday, baker, content creator, blogger. But like it's hard, yeah. But I think I do consider myself a baker, because like saying a caker just like doesn't sound as good. And I also don't want to limit myself.
I didn't even know that's a word.
I think it's like kind caker? Of a fake word, yeah. But what if I want to make like brownies tomorrow? I don't want to like limit myself. But yeah, so I think baker is the best
word. And finally claim that mantle as cookie queen.
Exactly.
So the thing that's going to surprise our listeners is that you only quit your day job 6 weeks ago.
Yes. It still doesn't really feel... It's kind of funny because I don't even know where the last 6 weeks have gone. But every day and when I look back on the day, I'm like, how did I used to do all of this and work at the same time? And part of it's that I had this laundry list of like giant goals I wanted to accomplish that I began tackling when I quit. And I never would have been able to while I was working. But I just... Yeah, I don't know how I literally don't know how I did.
So you had said to yourself, I don't know, a few years ago, a year ago, that you would quit when you achieved X.
Yes.
Tell us what those things were.
They weren't even supposed to be real goals. They were kind of like fake goals. They were goals that were meant to be like excuses for not quitting my job. Because that's the other thing. I really liked my job. I didn't want to quit. I like enjoyed my team. I learned a lot there. Every day was interesting. So I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to quit, Chell Suites has to make 2 times my corporate salary because like, you know, there's vacation and health insurance and like, you know, there's a lot of other things that, and also like security. So like, I was like, I need to make a lot more money if I'm going to do Chell Suites full time. And then I also, in a long side story, bought a condo in Seattle several years ago because I thought I was going to move home. And I just couldn't imagine quitting my job and not having a confirmed steady income and like having a mortgage. I was like, that's so scary. I'm so risk averse. I can't even tell you. I was like, I got to pay off my mortgage before I quit. I can't quit and like have that over my head. And then the third thing was having a steady monthly income. And for me, it's being a blogger and content creator, you're going to get these big partnerships, but you never know when they're going to happen. You don't really have control over them because a brand is just going to do an activation and decide to reach out to you. You have no influence over it. So I wanted to just have some kind of like, okay, well, I know I'm going to make X dollars a month and I can like pay my rent and I'll be fine. And so for me, those things didn't really fall into place until literally every, like this, speaking of luck, the stars just like aligned. I got a bunch of huge partnerships Q4 of last year. And
you still talk like an accountant.
I know. I said Q4 and I was like, last fall. And I was able to pay off my mortgage. It made my income for the year for Chell Suites great. And I also got to a point where like, I was monetizing my videos on Facebook and my blog was doing well. And I just like had steady income every month where like even if I don't have a partnership, I felt like the type A side of me wasn't gonna like crawl under a rock and die from stress. Like I felt like I could live my life the way I want to and not worry so much about money. And so I was like, this is it. Like I'm here. And it just kind of came to me one day. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who made a similar leap this year. And she was just like, what are you waiting for? Like, you are doing great. Like, just do it. And then I was like thinking about it and I took a step back and was like, I think I am ready. And then once I got that through my head, I was just like counting down the days until I left my job. Not because I didn't like it, but just because I realized I was really ready to like make this transition.
And you also wanted a blessing from your parents.
Yeah. What's so funny is like my parents... I wasn't actually worried about what they would say. My mom and sister didn't really believe I was going to quit. They're like, we'll believe you when we see you quit. But I wasn't actually worried about them like not approving. But I talked to them a lot because I really value their opinion. And they, you know, shared their advice and kind of what they thought. But they were 100% supportive. And I just think I'm really lucky to have had that. I did, but it also never occurred to me that they would not be supportive. But I think it's just like once I set my mind on something, I'm going to do it. And I think my parents kind of like respect my drive. So
you've put some really useful content out into the world. It's not just your videos, which I love. No one loves buttercream more than me. I'm like, I should have a t-shirt that says like Team Buttercream.
I'll take one too.
American buttercream.
Yes.
I don't like those fancy buttercreams. Whenever I go to a party and there's a cake that looks like it's buttercream, and it turns out it's like whipped cream or something. I'm like a kid who found out, like, I don't know, Santa Claus doesn't exist or something.
That's like exactly how I feel too. I very much respect that opinion. I like that.
So anyway, I was saying you've put some really great content out there for people who want to be freelancers, content creators, etc. And I really hadn't read much like this. So I have to A, commend you for putting this out there, but B, I want to talk through some of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the importance of financial planning.
Yep.
Like you said, having income, mm-hmm. Insurance. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Insurance is so important. And I think a lot of people think if you don't have a job, you're just like, what are you going to do? Well, at least that's what I thought. I was like, what am I going to do? I've never thought of even being a freelancer. And I technically am a freelancer, but I've never thought that would be like what I'd be doing. And so there's a few ways around it, but honestly, with like the Affordable Care Act, you can get insurance. And the answer is it's going to be...
In New York State.
Yeah, twice. It varies based on where you live, but it's going to be twice as expensive as if you had stayed at your corporate job. But you can do it. You can find it. You can be covered. You can have good insurance and be happy. It's also easier if you're married, which I am not. But if you
have one working partner.
Yes. But mm-hmm. if you have lived with someone, it varies state to state again. But if you can claim yourself as a domestic partner, which means you're in an exclusive relationship and you've lived together for a certain period of time, you can sign an affidavit and go on their insurance. So,
right. Some people don't even know companies offer that.
Yep. And it's still more expensive than if you were to pay for your own insurance through your own company. But there's a lot of ways around it. And it's really important to have insurance of all kinds. And you just really have to think those things through, because you never know when something's going to happen. And you don't want, when you're just quit your job and you're trying to figure out your money situation and everything, the last thing you need is like a huge medical bill. So
you also talked about incorporating your company.
Yes. So I became an LLC right before I left Edelman. I used to be a sole proprietorship. And it kind of just depends on like where you see yourself going with your business. And for tax benefits, I think I'm going to become an S Corp this year. Thank you, Dad, for talking me through that. But it kind of just depends on like where you want to go down the road and what makes the most sense with where you live and what you're doing. But that's important too, to have business licenses. And it is hard, because especially when you're starting out, you might not know exactly what you want to do in the long run. But the answer is just like, do your research, look it up, figure it out, see if it makes sense for you, if it's the right thing for you. And it feels empowering also to know that you're covered or you're making the right decisions.
And talk to other people.
Yeah.
I feel like people are more generous these days with advice than when I was your age, because there were just, I don't know, people were more protective of what they knew. Whereas I think now a lot of people just want people to be happy and successful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in this day and age, a lot of people are venturing out on their own. Maybe that's the biased side of me living in New York and knowing a lot of people that are in my field. But I think, yeah, just talking to people, asking if you know someone else that's done something similar recently, they've gone through everything, just grab coffee with them and chat through. I literally did that with my friend yesterday. We were talking about taxes and S-Corps and everything. And it's not what you would think would be the most exciting conversation, but it's important to have those.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbock cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly here on HRN. Every week, I conduct intimate interviews with the brilliant, powerful women in the food world. We discuss their lives, their careers, and the ways in which they navigate the world at large. You can find Speaking Broadly wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. It's Jess. Time for a little housekeeping. Have you listened to our Future of Food miniseries yet? All 10 episodes are out now. I had so much fun producing this series and learning what members of the Bomb Squad across the country want to see in our future. If you're looking to get inspired, I definitely recommend you give it a listen. It's available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Jess. Let's get back to my conversation with Chelsea. You also talk about something that was interesting. It was having a diversified revenue stream.
Being diversified in life is good, you know, for your retirement or for savings or however you're investing. It's important because you don't know what's going to happen in the world or in your life, or like, this sounds stupid, but like monetizing across different platforms on social media is important because you don't know if maybe one of your accounts is going to stop doing so well or one's going to do really well and there's a big opportunity there. So just being able to kind of plan ahead and not have all your eggs in one basket, it just makes life better. You're less stressed. And I am such a stressor. I need every way that I can to not worry about things. And that's, I think, one of the best ways.
You mentioned monetizing your different platforms. I think so many people are curious about that because social media, yes, YouTube, everything still seems very mysterious.
Yes.
And how to turn those things into opportunities for monetization. So can you walk us through your different platforms?
Totally. So YouTube is like the most basic and I think straightforward one that people get. You know, you put ads on your videos. There's literally a button that you click and it pops up when you go to watch a video.
Can you control what ads you put up
there? No. But I think that you, like, if you could say if like you don't want certain types of ads on there, like based on categories.
Did you have to reach a certain amount of viewers before you had that option to add ads?
I honestly don't remember. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there is, but
what are you up to on YouTube? I didn't
like 104,000.
Okay.
Nothing
okay.
Too crazy.
It's 104,000 more than I have on YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube is like,
no, I'm kidding, I'm not on YouTube.
YouTube is like, but the platform I struggle the most with, just because like long form videos are not, I don't always love being on camera. I don't not like it. It's just a lot more work.
So how did you start your YouTube channel?
I literally started at the same time that I started making videos for Instagram. If you go back to my earliest one, it's literally a terrible out of focus, just like video.
And dumb question, but are you putting the same videos on both channels?
So in the beginning,
or both platforms?
In the beginning I did, just because like I didn't know any better. And you know, but it's a best practice to have like long form videos on YouTube that, you know, are going to be slower, aren't sped up, that you're kind of walking through steps. People on YouTube are there generally because they want to learn how to do something. So while they do want to be entertained and compilation videos that are sped up are great, a lot of people go because they want to learn some kind of skill or learn how to do something. So you want to take your time with it. You don't want it to be fast and you want to talk through it. So it's a much different format than like the sped up, no talking, like 30-second Instagram video that I share. So now I make different videos for like all my platforms.
How long are your YouTube videos?
They vary a lot. They could be 3 minutes to like 12 minutes.
Okay. How have you learned all of this about YouTube? Do you have a relationship with YouTube?
No. Just like,
you've just learned it all on your own. Yeah. Because they do have
relationships
with some of their creators.
I'm not that cool. And in New York, there's just like a lot of big creators.
Okay.
So I don't think I'm quite the top of their list.
But you're totally self-taught.
Yeah.
On this. Okay.
They have their own guides for like best practices. And you can also just watch other people. Like you can see what other people are doing that's working well and kind of figure out what type of videos you should be doing, how you should be filming and all
that.
No,
I think this is good for everybody to know because, again, like I said, the process can seem so mysterious.
You just figure it out as you go. You start doing stuff, you figure out what works, figure out what doesn't, and you just try to go from there. I definitely have not fully figured out YouTube. It's still something, that's one of the things when I quit, I was like, I need to like try harder on YouTube, so.
But you have figured out how to monetize it.
Yeah. Well, that part's not that hard.
Okay, right. You said it's pressing a button.
Literally.
I could probably figure that out.
And you can actually monetize, like you can click to not monetize certain videos if you want.
And does this represent a nice income stream for you?
It's like moderate.
Okay.
And then another, I guess, revenue stream, for lack of a better word, I need to like talk less like an accountant, is Facebook. So Facebook actually now is letting you monetize videos that are long, which means 3 minutes or longer. So basically, they want you to put your YouTube videos on Facebook. And I actually got to be a part of their Launchpad program, which is like a special thing they did. It was like invite only, and they basically incentivized you to post one long form video a week. And I actually got to go into the Facebook offices for like a creator's day, which was the coolest thing ever. I thought I was like gonna die. I was so excited. But I learned a lot there, and so I've started monetizing on Facebook, which has been really great too, because it doesn't take a ton more work. You still have to like schedule all your videos, and you know, you try to interact with people, so it's not like it's no time involved. But it's been a great way to have another source of income. So that's been nice.
Are you repurposing your YouTube videos? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not creating fresh content.
So I shared a lot of old ones in the beginning, and now I'm sharing all new content just like across my platform. So, you know, like I'll make a new cake, I'll share it lined up across, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Okay.
So.
And did you figure out a lot of that on your own?
Yeah, they like, as part of the program, they have like, you know, I think most platforms have videos that'll be like best practices. You should tag this video like this. You should include a thumbnail. You should, which are all very basic things that I mm-hmm. think most people can figure out. But they definitely like walk you through it to try to help you, I don't know, help your videos have the most reach.
Okay. How about Instagram?
Instagram. So that's the funny. Sometimes people will literally be like, do you make money off of Instagram videos? And I'm like, well, not quite like that. But by posting regular content and growing in my following, brands are going to come to you and be like, do you want to do a partnership? Or like, will you represent this product? Or doing this campaign, will you be a part of it? And so you can make a lot of money on Instagram, but you have no control over it. So it's great because it's, you can make a lot of money, but
no control, meaning you're not out there pitching brands.
No.
To work with you.
No.
You're waiting for them to come to you.
I've like reached out to some brands, but in general, it's not always worth your time. And I don't mean that because like it's worthless. It's more so that if a brand wants to do something with you, it's because their company decided they're doing a campaign. They know they want you and you're a fit, and it's just like great. But if you pitch a brand, even if you are a good fit for them, if they don't have money set aside for some kind of activation, like you're not going to be able to do anything with them. So it's kind of just like timing. And it's, to me, it just makes more sense to have a brand approach you.
What do you do to make yourself more discoverable?
I think that it's a lot of different things. So number one, I think it's creating high quality content. And that could mean a lot of different things, but just like, you know, doing your best job with whatever you're doing. The other thing I think that helps a lot is making a lot of videos. Like they are so, you know, you go on the explore page and you see them. So you're reaching a lot of people and people that don't necessarily follow you. Half the time it's like somebody from an agency follows me or saw a video. They have a client, because you're never working with a brand directly. You're almost always working with an agency. They or their friend loves you and like somehow saw your videos. And so just by being out there and having people see what you're doing, that's what it is.
So explain to people what you just said. You're not working with the brands Yes. necessarily. You're working with an agency.
Yes. So I think I've worked directly with a brand like once, literally, of all my partnerships. What brands do, what a lot of brands do, it varies, because I think a lot of companies are waffling back and forth with whether they have social in-house or they outsource it. But a lot of brands work with agencies who manage their campaigns. And then so they'll, you know, give a budget to an agency. The agency will then come up with a campaign, a strategy, figure out who they want to work with, reach out to the influencers, figure out what kind of content they're going to create, get everything approved, and then create this beautiful work of art that is a campaign to support some kind of cause or new product launch or something like that.
So we haven't talked anything about cake or cake trends.
Sure.
So I'm dying to ask you questions because we're working on our baker's issue.
Okay.
It's our 13th issue. The theme is Baker's Dozen. But I'm so curious about how trends happen in the baking world.
Yeah.
And I was looking at your cakes and I don't even know the name for it. What is it when
the
you... The drips.
The drip cakes.
Right. How did drip cakes... they're just like the thing now.
Like literally Catherine Sabbath. She is an Australian baker who...
I love that you had an answer at the ready.
Straight up.
Catherine Sabbath. So naked cakes.
Yes.
That wasn't a thing when I was a kid, but now it's all about the naked cake.
Yes. So there's like the actual naked cake, which is where you like are stacking layers with frosting. And then there's like the Christina Tosi naked cake, which is like usually you use an acetate sheet and you stack up. But that is totally a different look and so fun. And I think she definitely gave a new approach to mm-hmm. naked cakes that people recreate all the time now.
Because I've heard her say that you put so much thought into what's inside the cake
yep.
and then you never see it.
Yep.
So she wanted people to see what they were eating.
I totally agree. And that's like when I decorate cakes, I love to incorporate like the whatever flavors on the inside on the outside so you can see. But I 100% agree with her. It's like silly when you can't even tell what you're about to eat.
And you put so much work into your cake layers.
Yes.
You've got rainbow cake layers, checkerboard, marbled, everything.
I try.
What else is big in the cake world right now? What do you notice that everybody's loving and doing?
What a question.
A few fun trends.
One big one is like the letters or the number cakes where it's like an A.
Oh, I see those everywhere.
Like
and they're like macaroons on them.
Yep, and like all kinds of like meringues and edible flowers. I'm actually thinking about making my fiance one for his 30th birthday as a joke.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
You got engaged recently.
Yes.
So much happening in your life.
Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff. But that's like a really fun cake trend. I haven't actually, they do it with cake and cookies, and I actually haven't tried it yet, which is why I want to do it, I think, next month. But I don't know if I've like missed the boat on it, but that's definitely a fun one because people can really customize it. It's the same concept, but you can do a lot of different things to kind of make it your own. It's fun to see people.
Do you need a mold of the letter?
So most people cut it. So they'll make like a sheet cake and they'll like make a template and trace it. And
okay.
Cut it. Yeah.
So what is a signature Chell sweet cake?
I think, if anything, my signature is this, just that I like make great tasting, colorful buttercream cakes. I always want cakes to taste good. So like that's one thing. Because a lot of the specialty cakes out there are beautiful, but sometimes like there's so much fondant or so much in it that like you almost don't want to eat it. And I think that I really pride myself on the fact that like my cakes, I always say that my cakes taste as good as they look. But I just want to make fun cakes that make people smile, that make me smile, that I feel good about trying new techniques and, again, like anything colorful, I love.
And I would imagine you've encouraged a lot of people to start baking.
Yeah, I feel kind of conceited saying like, oh, I like inspired people to bake. Because I don't really think about it that way. But people do message me a lot and are like, oh, you inspired me to make my first cake from scratch. Or like, I made frosting for the first time and I feel so happy that I... And that is kind of like one of my goals is I found so much joy in the, like, you know, no matter what I was doing in work, I'd come home, I'd be in my kitchen, and I would just be happy. And I have always hoped that like other people can experience the same thing. And maybe they didn't know they could find so much happiness baking, but I want to kind of bring that joy into people's lives. And so if that's what people are finding as they're kind of starting their own baking journey, then I'm 100% happy. And that's like my goal being accomplished.
Fantastic. So who eats all of these cakes?
What a good question. And literally the number one question I get asked.
Really?
Like, where do all your cakes... Okay, things that infuriate me. What do you do with all your cakes?
That was kind of a selfish question because I was like, you can... We're happy to take them off your hands.
People are like, do you just throw away your cakes when you're done with them? And I'm like so offended by that. Because like my mom is German and like I did not waste food growing up. That's like not a part of my being. So I get really angry when people say that. But I never respond angrily. I'm like, no. I used to bring them into my coworkers, right? I'd shove them in Tupperware, bring them in for my coworkers.
You'd shove them in Tupperware.
I would. It was
you did
like,
not shove them in Tupperware. These are beautiful cakes.
They were sliced up and they were crammed in there. But it was Tupperware cake. And like I would walk through the office to the kitchen and people would be like, oh my, it's time. Like I get like a line after me. It was great. So then I quit my job and I was like, what am I going to do with all the cakes? And I've been giving them to friends who have offices that are close by, sharing them with their coworkers. I've also given some to my fire station and my police station are right next to each other. So I've given some to them. And then I've also just had like some friends stop by and pick them up. But it's hard because...
Well, we're friends now, right?
Yeah. No, okay. I know. We just got to figure out how to get cake out here. But it's like, it's hard to be like, so I cut this cake open. So a quarter of it is missing, but it's a really good cake. And like, you should eat it. Here you go. Like, it's creepy. So I can't really just like give cakes to random people.
Only you would say that's creepy.
People are like, what happened to the quarter of the cake? Like, why? You know, and then you got to go into this thing. Like, well, I make videos and I like to cut the cake. So like, when I went to the police station for the first time, I'd be like, that was the most embarrassing thing. I was like, so I'm like this cake maker. And I cut this cake, but you guys should eat it anyways. And they were like, all right. It was weird. That's my life.
Do you still enjoy making cakes?
I do. And that's like one of the reasons why I kind of why I realized I needed to quit my job was like I got to this point where I wasn't really enjoying anything. And I didn't really feel like I was doing a good job at anything. And that's me being really hard on myself. But I just like wasn't getting that satisfaction that I used to from it. And now that I'm putting all of my energy into one thing instead of a bunch of different things, I've definitely like refound my joy in the process. So
you said you felt so run down. You were operating at 70% all of the time.
Yes.
And you're the type of person who wants to give her all.
Yes. I felt like that for like 2 years. It was just like, you just don't feel great about yourself. And it's not a good feeling.
I think a lot of us can relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing so many things. It's so much is uncertain today. You know, you never know. Like you said, you don't have control over when someone decides that they want to partner with you.
Yeah.
So that's a scary part about the freelance thing or being self-employed or being a small business person mm-hmm. is really not having a lot of control over your business.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I know.
Do you have an agent?
Fun fact, no, but I'm in the process of working on that.
You are?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you need one?
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised you got to this level without one.
It's a long story. When I worked at Elliman, I literally reviewed contracts, like influencer contracts. That was part of my job from a financial perspective. But so I'm super comfortable negotiating my own rates, knowing what I should look for, pushing when I think that I'm worth more, saying no to things if it's not the right fit. I've always felt fine doing that. But I think there is just like a point where an agent can still do more for you than you can do for yourself. And so I'm...
Such as?
Not to sound like crass, but to get you more money.
No, we need to talk about this.
Just because like, yes, I can like put... Like mm-hmm. That was the thing. I would be at work and I would see like a contract go out and I would see how much money we were paying someone. And I would be like, I am like, not to be terrible, but like, I mean, my account is 5 times bigger than that. Like, and it's not that it's linear where like so-and-so makes this much money on a campaign, you should make 5 times that rate. It's not like that. But it was more so, it made me think like, well, what am I charging and what's my rate card? And those kind of things are hard because it varies from person to person. And there's not, everyone's like, what, there's like a formula or like, what should the equation be? And that's not really how it is. It varies so much from person to person, what industry you're in, what kind of content you're creating, what kind of engagement you have. And so a lot of that kind of made me just think about things more. And I just think that my energy is going to be better put into like creative thinking and making amazing cakes and not like haggling back and forth with brands. And also just like, if you really go with a big agency, they have so many connections, they can bring new business. And it just like, you have an advocate in your corner. And I'm, now that I'm doing so much more with Chill Suites, like I could use someone in my corner fighting for me. So.
Would you like to do a cookbook one day?
Funny story. I actually almost did a cookbook this fall. This is something I haven't really talked about. I almost did a baking book, a cake book this fall. I actually worked on it over the summer on the proposal, and we made a beautiful proposal, and we pitched it, and we got an offer. But it just, like, it, like, ruined my summer. I was so stressed out. I think I was already spread too thin, and that was just the thing, like, literally broke, like straw that broke the camel's back. I like was having anxiety. I was like having like heart palpitations. I wasn't sleeping well. I like literally felt nauseous. At one point in time, I was like, am I pregnant? And then I was like, no. But it was just like not good. And then I finally got the offer and like thought about everything that it was going to entail. What they wanted was more than I had thought would be the case, like the number of cakes and the whole process. And it just like, I finally hit this wall where I was like, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. It's not right. It doesn't feel right. And then I was like, no. And I like walked away from it, which like sounds crazy, but everyone thought I was crazy. But it just felt like the right thing. And I really believe in trusting your gut. So it's not that I never want to do a cookbook, but it's just like at that time, I was convinced I did not want to quit my job, even though it was like September, how things change. But it just like, I didn't want to quit my job for that. And it just like didn't feel right. And so it's not that I would never want to make a book down the road, but just right now, I really want to focus on like getting in a good place. And once I'm there, I'll reconsider.
So we're going to do a speed round and then let you out of here so you can go make your cake.
Yeah.
What cake are you making today?
There is a matcha cake in my fridge right now that is crumb coated. It's matcha chocolate and it's going to have a chocolate drip. It's going to have some green tea or like matcha candies on it. It's going to be pretty cute.
Do you do a soak?
No, I don't actually. I'm a big fan of butter cakes, so I don't usually do any kind of simple syrup, but that doesn't mean I never do. And sometimes I do.
Okay, let's see where I'm going to start with. Your favorite kitchen implement?
My cake stand. It's an Ateco 612 and I've had it for years and my life would literally not be the same without it.
And that's one of those revolving cake
stands. It's metal. It's the best thing ever. I put like a 4-tiered super heavy wedding cake on it. It spins like a, I don't know, like a dream. It's amazing.
Go-to snack.
Greek yogurt with jam.
Most treasured cookbook.
Ooh, my first Sally's Baking Addiction. I got it. She came to New York and actually got it signed. And that was when like several years ago when I was just starting to bake and I like hugged her and it was a great day.
Dream vacation destination.
The Amalfi Coast. A little cliche, but I've always wanted to go there and it's so pretty and I think we might go there on our honeymoon. We haven't decided yet though.
Song that makes you smile.
I listen to a lot of emo punk music, so this just takes me a minute. Fun fact. I'm still a 16-year-old at heart. Song that makes
me... Who's like an emo punk band?
Like Mayday Parade.
Okay.
Like some screaming things.
Okay.
My Chemical Romance. Like, I don't know.
Okay, you don't see...
I don't know.
You don't seem like... I mean, I'm sitting here stereotyping you. I'm sorry.
I listen to Pop Punk Playlist, which is like literally just like 16-year-olds that are like mad at the world.
Okay.
A song that makes me smile. I think Beautiful by Bazzi.
If you had to be trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be and why?
Guy Fieri. Guy Fieri is my very favorite food celebrity of all time. I've never met him, but one day I will. Someday it will happen. But I love him. He's so funny. And like, I just love Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Great. Your last week's guest said the same thing.
Really?
And that was a first. See, people, no one has ever said Guy Fieri.
I always say that and people are like, who even likes him? And I'm like, all of America likes him. He has like 5 shows and people pretend like they don't, but he has so many memes about him. People love him and they just won't admit it.
Chelsea, thank you for your time.
Of course.
You're great. I hope it's the first of many times you come on the radio show.
Yes, I hope so too. I had a great time.
All right. Happy baking.
Thank you. You too.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Chelsea for sharing her story with me. I'm so excited to see what she does next. If you want to see some of Chelsea's incredible cakes, make sure to follow her at ChelSweets on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Thank you to Hanson Brook Farm for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. For more, visit hansonbrookfarm.com. Radio Cherry Bomb's associate producer is the one and only Jess Zeidman, and our theme song is by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Mafam. I'm chef and owner at Mingle and Gray's in Chandler, Arizona. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? My mom, Maria Moini. My mom inspires me because she left Iran to come to the U.S. with my dad and sister without knowing anything about the language or culture. She taught me how to be a strong, resilient woman. I learned how to cook by watching her cook Persian food for us every day. Mariam is a professional artist renowned for her unique style and love of nature.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. And you can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without the support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.